Yasodhanandana bhajanandana Yamunakirana chare Yamunakirana chare Yamuna Tira Vanachari Sayurana Madhava Kunja Bihari Sayurana Madhava Kunya Bihari Maya Gopira Navalnava Girivara Dhani Maya Gopira Navalnava Girivara Dhani Yasoda Nandana Bhajana Nandana Yasoda Nandana Bhajana Nandana Yasoda Nandana Bhajana Nandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari 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 Jayarana Madhava Kunya Bihari Jayarana Madhava Kunya Bihari Jaya Gopirana Vallabha Giriyana Dhani Jaya Gopirana Vallabha Giriyana Dhani Jaya Gopirana Vallabha Girivana Dhari Yasoda Nandana Bhajana Nandana Yasoda Nandana Bhajana Nandana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tirana Chari 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 Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Harinam Sankirtan Yagya ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Govind. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the second canto, chapter 7, entitled Scheduled Incarnations, text number 7. Can you give me the danda? Text number 7. Kamam dahante kritinana nuraso drishtya. Kamam dahante kritino nanurasa drishtya. Rusam dahantam mutate na dahanti asayam. Rusam dahantam mutate na dahanti asayam. Soyam yatantaram malam pravisan bibeti. Kama katam nu punarasya manasayeta. Lust. Dahanti. Chastise. Kritina. Great stalwarts. Nanu, but, rosa drishtya, by wrathful glance, rosam, wrath, dahantam, being overwhelmed, uta, although, te, they, na, cannot, dahanti, subjugate, asayam, intolerable. Sa, that. I am him. Ya, because. Antaram, within. Alam, however. Pravishan, entering. Bibeti, is afraid of. Kama, lust. Katam, how. Nu, as a matter of fact. Puna, again. Asya, his. Mana, mind. Srayeta, take shelter of. Translation. Great stalwarts like Lord Shiva can, by their wrathful glances, overcome lust and vanquish him, yet they cannot be free from the overwhelming effects of their own wrath. Such wrath can never enter into the heart of him, the Lord, who is above all this. So how can lust take shelter in his mind? Purport. When Lord Shiva was engaged in severe austere meditation, Cupid, the demigod of lust, threw his arrows of sex desire. Lord Shiva, thus being angry at him, glanced at Cupid in great wrath, and at once the body of Cupid was annihilated. Although Lord Shiva was so powerful, he was unable to get free from the effects of such wrath. But in any time, on the contrary, Bhriga Muni tested the tolerance of the Lord by purposely kicking him, by kicking his chest. But instead of being angry at Bhriga Muni, the Lord begged his pardon, saying that Bhriga Muni's leg might have been badly hurt because his chest is too hard. The Lord had the sign of the foot of Bhrigupada as the mark of tolerance. The Lord, therefore, is never affected by any kind of wrath. So how can there be any place for lust which is less strong than wrath? When lust or desire is not fulfilled, there is the appearance of wrath. But in the absence of wrath, how can there be any place for lust? The Lord is known as Uptakama, or one who can fulfill his desires by himself. He does not require anyone's help to satisfy his desires. The Lord is unlimited, and therefore his desires are also unlimited. All living beings but the Lord are limited in every respect. How then
Can the limited satisfy the desire of the unlimited? The conclusion is that the absolute personality of Godhead has neither lust nor anger. And even if there is sometimes a show of lust and anger by the absolute, it should be considered an absolute benediction. Om Agyanati Mananasya Agyananana Salakya Chaksura Minitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhuttave Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Sikaro Siyuta Padakamanam Sikarum Vaisnavamsya Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganaraganatam Vidamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Visakam Vitamstya He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesa Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vindavaneswari Vishabhanu Sutta Devi Panamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpadrubhya Cha Sakripa Sindhubhya Vacha Paditanam Pavane Bhyo Vaisnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. The Lord Shiva is a very special personality who is an highly empowered being. Ksiram Yata Dadi. It is explained just as milk is transforming into yogurt. In the same way, Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, expands himself, and when he mixes with the material motes, he transforms into a different form, and particularly when he is associating with the mote of ignorance, Tamaguna, then he takes the form of Rudra. There are several Rudra forms, and in this form he is acting as Lord Shiva, who is not like an ordinary living entity. Ordinary living entities can take their birth in 8,400,000 species of life, and within these 8,400,000 species of life, they may sometimes take a birth in a very, very powerful body, such as the body of a demigod or even the body of Lord Brahma, which is extremely powerful because Lord Brahma is huge in size, has four heads in this universe, where he can think simultaneously, is known as the most intelligent being, emanates the entire creation, creates so many great saintly personalities simply from his mind, emanates the Vedas and so many other forms of knowledge, nescience, and so forth. Lord Brahma is extremely powerful. So that position is available to the Jiva, the living entity. Then just below the position of Lord Brahma, we find the position of other principal demigods, such as Agni, or Vayu, or Indra, Varuna. These are very, very powerful personalities. They control great, great powers within this universe, and it is practically inconceivable to us what they can do. Their size, their abilities, their lifespan, it is inconceivable. Yet, the human being can change his body and can even enter into any of such species. He can also become Indra, because Indra is like a position. It is a position that one can take for a period of time, and then one loses it again. Just one can become the king of England, right? For example. That is possible. It is a position that one can have for some time. By his karma, he will become the king of England, and then, bang, after some time, comes down again. Ksini purcha macha loka vicenti. So it is explained that one may go to these higher positions of the devas, and even the principal devas, such as Brahma, Indra, etc., but one must always come down again. So therefore, these positions are temporary. The position of Lord Shiva is much different, because Lord Shiva is a highly empowered being who is a direct expansion of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, Lord Shiva is certainly transcendental. He is not under the three modes of material nature. And although he is displaying his wrath, he is known as Asutosh. Asutosh is the quality of Lord Shiva, which means he is easily pleased and also easily angered. So being easily pleased and angered, one can very quickly get a benediction from Lord Shiva. And devotees of Lord Shiva, they may get benedictions right now in this world. But generally speaking, the benedictions that Lord Shiva bestows are temporary benedictions within this material world. And they are actually not a blessing upon the head of the receiver. Rather, they are a burden. Such benedictions burden one and give one so many difficulties and become the cause of suffering, okay? Even if it looks wonderful. But there are so many stories of people who asked for benedictions which turned out to be problematic later on, like King Midas and his gold, you know, his whatever he touched, right? The famous story. It became troublesome. First he turned everything into gold, but then his food turned into gold, etc. And he couldn't really eat it. So he had problems. And what seemed so nice became actually the source of his misery. So this is the position in the material world. That which seems the most nice in the material world, which seems the most desirable in the entire material world, is like a big pit which is covered with nice green grass and looks very inviting. But underneath it is a huge deep pit. And as we run for it, think our most desired, treasured object is here present before us. This is my dream. Finally, the opportunity comes. Of course, it rarely happens like that, that your dream actually manifests in front of your eyes. Usually what manifests in front of your eyes is something like your dream. Like, let's say, I'll take it from a man's point of view, but we can also speak from a woman's point of view. That's the same thing. Let's say a man is always thinking of this ideal woman, right? The one, you know, the perfect one, the most beautiful one, not only beautiful one, the most gentle one, the most intelligent one, the most humble one, the most, the one with energy, the one with spirit, the one with everything that you could possibly be attracted about, right? So that one, of course, you may dream about, but you never meet. Right? But then you meet one that seems to have at least some of the qualities. Right? So, well, it's not exactly perfect. It's not what I dreamt. But then again, you know, not bad, right? Not bad. Looking at it, I consider it's not that far from many of desirable qualities there. So here comes the opportunity. Right? But immediately already you have to bring your standard down. You have to take a step down and say, well, I guess, you know, I'm gonna settle for this, right? And then once in your mind you say, well, okay, forget the ideal. Now I'm gonna settle for what I can get. I'm gonna settle for this, right? Already you've made your first compromise, right? So it's not ideal anymore. And then it goes further and further and further. Again, compromise, compromise, compromise. Because of course she's an independent entity, which is not exactly gonna play out the part that you have written in the script in your mind, right? Because not only did you have like a whole idea of what she was going to be like, what she looked like and how she behaved, but you had a whole script with it as well, how she was going to interact with you, etc. And then she doesn't act according to the script, right? And again, you know, you have to swallow, right? So gradually, what seemed to be the most idyllic, most desirable situation turns into an endless pit which doesn't seem to have a bottom. Suddenly you fall through the green grass and the flowery surface, and you begin to realize that, hey, it's not ideal, and you fall in, and then you think, now it's enough, now we've suffered enough, now it's got to be all right again, and you try to make up, and then you fall again. Again, it doesn't work out, yes? And the amazing thing is that two people who look into each other's eyes with starry, starry looks and say, I love you, can cause each other so much suffering, yeah, over the years. That is quite amazing how that happens. And even if they don't want to, they do it anyway. Yeah? Even if they don't want to cause suffering to each other, they do. Why is this so? Because when one is under the influence of lust, then one is trying to enjoy the situation, and one is attached to control the situation. Lust is such a quality that it makes us want to put a particular shape to the situation. But this is impossible. The modes of material nature take their own course. They take their own course. We cannot form and direct it at all. We are not at all the controllers of anything in this world, although sometimes it seems, for a while, that we're on top of the world, on top of the elephant. But before you know it, the elephant is on top of you. Okay? And then you are in an uncomfortable position. Very difficult. So, in the beginning, you think that life is a matter of being on top of the elephant. You think that's what it's all about. How to always be on top of the elephant. That is what I want out of life. But after a little while, you begin to find out that life is that you must be very, very careful not to be trampled under the feet of that elephant, and that you spend most of your time avoiding those dangerous, heavy, heavy, crushing feet, right? That you, on all sides, just watch out for all the threats and dangers and how you have to protect yourself from them, from the taxman, right? From the house owner, from the boss on the job, or from the government if you're on the Social Security, or, you know, from your parents, or from your teachers, or from your family. And in all sides, actually, you are, there is danger. Padam padam yadvipadam natesam. That is our position in the material world. It's not that you're going to be on top of the world all the time. That it's going to be great. It is not like that. The reality is that even those people who seem to have made it, they're not that many. Most people don't become great, great success. But some people seem to be successful in this world. It's a minority. Right? A minority is really making it. Of course, we can point at big famous personalities and call them a success. Or you may say, well, that's not really success because there's a lot of anxiety in such a life, of course. Right? Very artificial. You're being followed everywhere by people with cameras and all those kind of things. And it gets on your nerves after a while, right? So when you become a celebrity, then you have to go through certain anxieties. And it can go on and on and on. Until people that are famous hide themselves behind huge sunglasses, go out the back door when, you know, while all the fans are screaming in the front door, and there's always some madman or mad woman or trying to break into the door, right? And where you have like a car with a chauffeur who is also a black belt karate, just in case, you know, somebody tries something like that, right? And meanwhile, the chauffeur is stealing you blind. And your third wife may have an affair with that same chauffeur, etc. This is, of course, not always so ideal. Yeah, that's obvious. So you may say, no. I don't look at an ideal situation like that at all. I look more like simple. Nice girl, right? Simple. Not like so materially ambitious, little spiritually inclined. Not the most beautiful, but not the most ugly either. Kind of nice looking. Not super sexy, flashy, but not completely, you know, ugly and whatever ugly is. Everyone understands. Like that, you know. And then I don't need so much money and this, that. I just need a nice, simple house somewhere. Nice place, and you know, then I'll be happy. But that also doesn't exist. It just doesn't work like that. Some people may think they see that somebody is married. They look at a marriage. Sometimes you have these marriages, and I've seen them, where a girl in the beginning is very nice and, you know, skinny, etc. Everything is right. And then immediately after marriage, you know, right? 10 kilos, right? Especially Italian girls, got to be careful. And then after, you know, like they turn into real heavy mamas, you know, like, that has happened. Right? Again, I'm not singling anybody out. Don't take it like that. I'm just sketching a few situations. So I'm sketching that situation. I could also talk about a guy who, you know, turns into a real monster. But I'm talking about this particular situation. So you never know how it's going to turn out tomorrow. You don't. You have no idea what it's going to be like. And everything can change. People change completely overnight. And the person you think you get married to may turn out to be in a short while, a whole different person, a stranger. And you're looking at it like, this is not the one I married. And it can either be internal, external, you know. Therefore, these relationships are very insecure, and it is very difficult to really make your dreams come true. Right? Dreams, indeed, are fairy tales. But naive people, right? Innocent people, who are inexperienced, they are easily fooled. And if you promise them many nice things and speak to them nicely, they get bewildered. I love you. You are so wonderful. You give them gifts, candy and roses, and you look in their eyes and say, I can only think of you. Then ba-boom, 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 the heart starts beating, and before you know it, right, you sink down. And what you get is, you get a material relationship, and you become terribly attached to it. This is known as the knot in the heart, Hridaya Grantim. And this knot forms in the heart because all your hopes that you've had for so long, they begin to now focus on this relationship. Your mind tells you, this relationship I have now is the one. This is what is going to make me happy, this relationship. And therefore, all your material desires that you've had for a long time, spread out everywhere, suddenly become focused. And they all go through this one relationship. And all your hopes for happiness in the material world becomes focused on that one person. Yes. So then when it doesn't happen, it's quite understandable that you get a little frustrated. That is why there are many cases of anger in relationships. Okay? Like I was walking in Antwerp yesterday and I saw some of these posters hanging around with people, with ladies with black eyes and things like that, you know, having been beaten. Okay? So sometimes the man may be a very peaceful type, you know, very peaceful. He's nice and gentle to everyone, but he beats his wife, right? Only his wife. He'll never beat anybody else, but his wife, he'll definitely beat his wife, right? Because she's disappointing him, you know? Because she's not what his expectations were. She's not offering him perfection. Of course, how could she? But in his mind, he's got this very, very high dream. And she can't live up to the dream, and therefore he becomes frustrated, and his frustrated desire, his frustrated lust manifests in anger. And the wildest things happen in this regard. Even murders, you know, the whole family being killed, and then boom, right? Or things like that. Yeah. Where the object of attachment, which was the object of lust, and which was the hope for all happiness, turned out to be so unhappy that the person just becomes in utter frustration, just finishes it off. Now, I'm painting maybe extreme scenario, and some people may say, this is extreme, you know. I mean, not everybody is in such a bad situation. Life's not that bad. I mean, it's not that bad, right? Some may say. There are certainly, there's so much enjoyment in the world, and why be so pessimistic? I think the world is very beautiful, and I think there is a lot of beauty everywhere. And if you just mature, you develop the eyes to see it, and you can learn to relish it. And people preach like that. So you just have to know how to enjoy, and that is a maturing process. And I met many of such people. And they're saying everything is nice, and we must be nice and understanding about everything, everyone. And even if people do some things that are maybe not so good, we should not condemn them. We should not, we should not condemn the Nazis, right? Because you cannot say many are maybe not, were not so evil. They were also victims of the surroundings, etc. with poor people, and we should not condemn anybody. We should not condemn the heavy junkies that steal every day, like anything on the station, to get their 500 guilders a day for heroin. No, they're also victims of society, and we must be very warm and understanding. And in this way, we'll get a better world, and we can all together enjoy. Yeah? See, the only problem is that some people are out to give each other a hard time in this world. And if we would just stop giving each other a hard time and all try to be nice and just see that the little problems that you have sometimes, that they actually make you relish these moments of enjoyment even more. If we understand all this, then, you know, we can be happy all together. So it's just a little mental adjustment. It's not so bad. You're just thinking it's so bad because of your upbringing, etc. But free yourself and feel the positive energy of the earth and of the stars, and feel how you are one with it all, and feel how you become peaceful, and feel how you become very warm inside. And then in your mind, you go into a forest, and there is a beautiful tree, and it's your favorite tree. And just imagine the sun is just shining, and you're going to sit on your favorite spot and lean against your favorite tree. And now how do you feel? Very nice, isn't it? All right. So, we may think like that. And that's all right. All these things, they are certainly pointing people to be more in the mode of goodness. There are three modes of material nature: the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And you may be in the mode of goodness. So what does it mean in the mode of goodness? In the mode of goodness, you have some understanding of what to do and what not to do. In the mode of passion, you do this, all kinds of things. You chase after them, but actually these things are giving you suffering. So you may chase after money. You may chase after unlimited sex. You may just go and get drunk and think, I'm having fun, but in reality, you're going to wind up with a headache. Okay? And with such a mess. But a person in the mode of goodness understands, I'm going to do activities which are purifying. I'm going to live a nice life. I'm going to live healthy, in a healthy way. I'm going to eat nice food, not just junk food. I'm going to eat health food that gives health, strength, sustaining, etc. I'll be with people who are looking at themselves and who are ready to become better people, who are interested to develop, to improve themselves in this world. Very nice. So then you are going towards the mode of goodness. The Bhagavad Gita, of course, describes the qualities of goodness as samodamas tapusocham ksantir arjavam evacha jnanam vijnanam astikyam brahma karma svabhavajam. It says, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, religiousness, cleanliness, austerity. These are various qualities of the mode of goodness, which if one can develop them in his life, he'll become more peaceful. So let us say that you are one of those people who managed to bring more goodness in your life. All glories to you. You're going to be more peaceful. You're going to get more happiness than anybody else because you live in the mode of goodness. And then you're going to die. You too are going to die. In all your goodness, you're going to die. Right? And you're going to grow old. And no matter how much in goodness you are, you too, my friend, are going to wind up, right, like a very old person, trembling, etc. And that doesn't feel so good, you know. In spite of all your goodness, right, it's not so much fun to walk around with a little tablet under your tongue. It is not so much fun to have one of those sticks with the three extra prongs on them at the end for stability, or to sit in the old people's home, where you sit nice in the lobby in front of the television, where the nurse has just brought you down and said, your son has come today. Here he is. Ooh. Your son, Johan, remember? He is here. Oh, how nice. Aren't you happy that he has come? Hi, Mom. You know, a big kiss, right? You know, a big bunch of flowers, right? She can barely hold them, and she can hardly recognize her son. But anyway, there's no problem. The nurse is there to help remind her. Old age, right, is great suffering, because you see how you, yourself, what you thought you were, is falling to pieces. It's falling to pieces while you are in it, okay? I mean, how do you feel if you drive in a beautiful car and you know, suddenly, and it's your nice car, and suddenly one side falls off, you know? Ah, my car, right? So how do you feel when you walk in a body and suddenly your nice teeth, you know, right in the front, boom, they go. Ah, my teeth, you know? Ooh, right? And then, you know, you lose the control of one eye, right? It doesn't want to move properly. It doesn't want to move properly. And then your hand, you know, you get like a hand that sometimes does like that. You know? And so forth, right? And all these things start to happen, and you have to watch all that. You have no control over that. It gets out of control. So you can live so nice in a very beautiful setting of goodness, but you got to go through old age. And finally, even if you don't have such an old age, some people don't. Like my grandfather, you know, a little stiff he was, but basically he remained strong till the end and had a good time in his old age. He was sitting on his balcony in the sun, and then one day he just fell backwards, boom, and he was dead instantaneously. That was easy, okay? That can also happen. So you say, not everyone suffers like that. All right, but he died. And then what happened to him? Then again you take another birth, and again into the material world, and again into the modes of material nature, and you cannot maintain your goodness. So what good is it even if you can realize the mode of goodness? The mode of goodness is only good if it is a stepping stone to the transcendental platform. For that we are interested in cultivating elements of goodness. We are for the mode of goodness, and it is suddenly helpful to cultivate the mode of goodness where we can, although it's not our priority. Our priority is to serve Guru and Krishna, always first, and then that is followed by the system of Varnashram, which offers us a scientific system of coming to the mode of goodness. And so as we are taking a step forward in Krishna consciousness, then behind us we immediately make arrangements of Varnashram to support us, so that we don't fall back down from our platform to service in Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. But first, that service in Krishna consciousness, that becomes primarily. Because without Krishna consciousness, the entire Varna Ashram system, or the entire system of coming to the mode of goodness, which is the purpose of Varna Ashram, is useless. Ata pumbir dvitisresta Varna Ashram vibhagasa svanustitasya dharmasya sansidir haritosanam. That you have to do it for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, srama evihi kevalam. Simply a waste of time. Simply a waste of time. So this is the most important. And primarily, we are interested in becoming transcendental. But because we are under the influence of lust and anger and greed and lower qualities, it is helpful for us to follow a process of regulated behavior, which is called Varna Ashram. And that is why we're doing it. That is why we are adopting roles as brahmacharis, grihasthas, etc. That is why we take a position in Varna Ashram. Although it's secondary, but don't underestimate the strength and importance of it. It is important. And therefore, when we speak about the importance of being situated properly in the three modes of material nature, then that is true. And it could be helpful to us to take shelter of Varna Ashram in that sense, if we do it for the pleasure of the Lord. And if first and foremost, we are always looking at the interests of the Lord, and simply use the Varna Ashram situation as a base to return to. When we have engaged in devotional service, ventured out for Krishna, that then when we come to home base, that we have a nice ashram situation, which is very Krishna conscious and spiritual. That will sustain us, help us in the mode of goodness, and act as a stepping stone to come to the transcendental platform, which will lift us above the lower drives of lust, anger and greed, which can drag us down and down and down into the material energy. I'll leave it at this. If there are any questions, then we can try to answer. I have no idea. I just remembered it also from my childhood, not really from any time later. You know, it's just like suddenly I remembered Midas. Don't ask me why, but I don't exactly know where he came from. Some say he had something to do with the Greek days. Others claim there is a Vedic connection. I'm not sure at what time he appeared, or if he was a mythological figure, or if there actually was such a person. We should know that, of course, in the Vedic times, this process of alchemy, or the process of transforming ordinary base metals into gold, was not unknown. It was quite known. There were many, many people who could do it. It was not so extraordinary to be able to produce gold. But as time has changed, all these arts have been lost, and where previously in the Vedic times everyone was decorated very nicely with great opulence, now we're decorated with plastic instead of gold and diamonds. And we call that progress. But in reality, we are gradually going down and down and down. We think we're making progress by all the wonderful far-out things we're producing in our factories. And instead of real butter, we're having margarine, and instead of cake and glass. And it's all imitation. Yeah. So everything becomes imitation, becomes fake now. So this is our, if you look at ancient and old things that were made in the more primitive days, right? They were all strong and durable and of real good quality. And like if you had a nice oak wooden door, it was solid oak. Now it is just a little plate on it that looks like an oak door, and you couldn't tell the difference. So expertly they've made it in their factories. You would swear it's the real thing, but if you tap on it, it's completely hollow. Yeah? And in this way you can build a whole house, you know, and it looks like a fabulous place, but in reality they're all just plaster boards that are screwed on, and nothing is solid, and the whole house falls to pieces in a matter of years, right? Whereas in the ancient buildings, in ancient times, they were making structures that were made of big blocks of stone that would last forever and ever. So, okay, it wasn't exactly your question, but anyway, I'm telling it anyway. Yes, Martin. Yeah. So you want to know something about that. Because when the danda represents actually the sannyasi in his relationship with Krishna. Now we have heard that the danda is made of four pieces, four bamboo rods. Three are mind, body, and words. The fourth is the jiva, and we heard that the little half moon one is that you don't see now so much. On the top is the Paramatma. So the whole idea is that the living entity here is surrendering to Krishna. And the danda is made according to the body of the sannyasi. It must be the same length as the body of the sannyasi. And if it's a real heavy sannyasi, usually has a heavier danda. If he's a skinny sannyasi, he has a skinnier danda, like that. So therefore, before actually you pay obeisances, the sannyasi pays obeisances, first pays obeisances, the danda also pay obeisances first. Right. Yeah. This is a... Yes, how is it that the mercy of the Lord is causeless? The mercy of the Lord is always there. There is not a moment that the mercy of the Lord is not upon every single living being. And although the living being himself may not be doing anything to earn that mercy, still the mercy is upon him. Even if the living entity is seemingly in a horrible condition, you say, well, it looks now like the mercy is withdrawn from this one person. And this one person is sitting in the middle of so much misery. It looks like there's no mercy upon him. But of course, in the greater plan, even the mercy, even the misery is a form of mercy, because the person, by this mercy, is getting very much, by this pain and misery, is getting some serious purification and begins to very much question and wonder why and what is going on in life, and begins to, by the cause of the suffering, come closer to the material energy, to the Supreme Lord, to the spiritual energy. So everything is ultimately the mercy of the Lord. And it is not related to anything the living entity does. The Lord can decide himself when he will respond. Of course, still he says that especially my devotee is very dear to me, and as you surrender unto me, I reward you accordingly. And verses like that are there in the Bhagavad Gita. Yayatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajami aham. So it seems that there is a correlation between our activities and service and how much mercy you're going to get. And it seems the Bhagavad Gita is saying that directly. So that seems to contradict causeless principle. But yet, that is not exactly the case, because you cannot say that there is any obligation from Krishna to give you mercy, even if you are doing a certain amount of service. You cannot say if you give 100 lifetimes to Krishna completely, now he must give you mercy and take you and must give you fulfill your desire. No, he need not do so. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prayed, Aslishiva padaratam pinastumam adarsanam amatam karutuva yata tat vidatatalam pato mat prana natas tusevanapara. So basically, that you can do anything you like. You are, after all, lampato. You are an independent personality who is not at all showing any obligation to any devotee. The way that the Lord deals with the gopis is he does not show any obligation. Yet the gopis, they came for Lord Krishna, and they were young girls, and they were being married. They had husbands and children and families, etc. And then Krishna came into the forest, and he played his flute. And in a way he played it with so much potency that this flute was just screaming out to these young girls and said, the lips of Krishna are kissing me, right? And the gopi said, this is very embarrassing because the flute is a male form. And although he's a male form, he's being kissed by Krishna. This is very embarrassing. Anyway, they said, it is unbearable. This flute is just challenging and says, as long I admit that you also have a right to these lips, but only if you come. Otherwise, I will keep them for myself. So this sound of the flute is so strong. They have to go, and they leave the house. And then they give up everything. They give up their family. They go against their fathers. They go against their husbands, who flip out. They leave their babies. They just leave them lying there. And they just walk out. They leave the milk on the stove, which is boiling and boils over. They leave anything and everything, walk out into the forest. And when they come there, Krishna says, what are you young girls doing here so late in the night, all in the forest? Don't you know that young girls shouldn't be late at night in the forest, especially with young boys? Right? Don't you know? It's better that you go home. And they became so angry. Right? They became so upset. After everything we've gone through, he's doing this to us. Right? And then furthermore, after a time they managed to convince him, and they had their meetings in the forest. But he was completely not loyal to anyone. Not loyal to anyone. Okay. And in spite of this being not loyal, Srimati Radharani said, still I cannot remain angry with him. Okay. Any girl that remains angry with him, right, she's condemned. She said, she's condemned. Because how can one remain angry with our beloved? He can do anything and everything. So Krishna's is completely independent. He can do anything and anything. He has no obligation to us. And he can make us brokenhearted, or he can make us happy by being present before us. He can do anything and everything, and he always remains our worshipful Lord unconditionally. Still, Chitraketu Maharaj was once a great king who was very attached and who always wanted to have a son. It was very difficult for him to get. Anyway, went through a whole thing where he did get a son, and the son died at the premature age. That brought him to his senses. Then Chitraketu became a very powerful devotee. Subsequently, Chitraketu received a plane by which he could travel through the sky, within the material skies. And he traveled to the higher planetary systems. And along with his good wife, etc., he did that. So then he came upon the abode of Lord Shiva, and he saw that Lord Shiva was sitting there in the middle of the sages. Okay? There were many sages. Narad was present, and many other were present. Many great munis, etc., were there. And Lord Shiva was sitting with his wife, naked, right, on his lap, and she was embracing him. And Chitraketu made some comment about it and said, how amazing is it, right, that Lord Shiva can sit like that, being embraced by his wife, right, like this, in this condition, in the middle of all these sages. Parvati became very upset about that. Okay? She became very upset about that. Is how does he dare criticize Lord Shiva? And she cursed him. Right? And as a result, he had to become a demon, right, in his next life. Vritasura. So, okay, take heat. And, so we, from this particular description in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is described that the relationship between Lord Shiva and Parvati is certainly not on the ordinary mundane platform. And all the sages present there, they understood that. And therefore it was possible that, and even Chitraketu understood it, and actually had no other intention than to just describe how amazingly wonderful Lord Shiva was, but okay, Parvati took it different. That was, of course, a special arrangement. But we should understand that actually that relationship between Lord Shiva and Parvati is not of a mundane nature, but that it is of a special nature. Another instance, we saw that here how Cupid, when he came personified, how Lord Shiva could resist him. Most of us cannot. When the arrows hit us of lust, right, of sex desire, right, there you go. Very difficult to resist them. But Lord Shiva could. The only time Lord Shiva could not contain himself was when Mohini Murti appeared, when the Supreme Lord himself took the form of a beautiful woman and tried to entice him. Then he lost it. He lost his self-control. He went after her, tried to embrace her, and even lost semen in the process. Right? So there Lord Shiva couldn't contain himself. But he could understand that now it is the Supreme Lord. Yes. So therefore Lord Shiva accepted that. And when he actually, after he had lost semen, he lost, immediately he lost agitation. Because it says once the semen is discharged, after immediately lust is gone. So then he came to his senses. And at that point he had an exchange with the Supreme Lord. And Lord Shiva actually did not feel ashamed because he could understand that simply this is the unlimited potency of the Supreme Lord. Okay? There was nothing I could have done about that. It is the glory of the Lord. That even I, who am actually never under the influence of lust, right, fell prey to lust when the Lord himself took the form of a woman. So in this way, we see it clearly read in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Lord Shiva is never under the influence of lust, and that therefore the relationship with Parvati is not mundane and ordinary, not one of lust. It is a relationship which is part of the plan of the Supreme Lord. See, just like... The Lord has a blueprint for everyone. He has a plan for everyone. So he has a plan for Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva is aware of his duties and of his plan and what his duty is as a generator and as a destroyer, etc. Yes. So Lord Shiva, whenever he does pass semen like that, obviously it's very potent and there comes a son, a conception, etc. And these conceptions are also playing their part in the universal administration. And in this way, Lord Shiva is simply an instrument of the Supreme Lord in the universal administration. Still, we see that he sometimes falls prey under the influence of wrath, okay, which is even more difficult to control. And there we see that Lord Krishna is superior. Lord Vishnu is superior to Lord Shiva in that regard. That's in the purport. Now you're satisfied? Or are you never satisfied? If one is never satisfied, that is a sign of not yet full developed Krishna consciousness. Because on the platform of full Krishna consciousness, one will be satisfied. So sometimes we just have to accept. You know, we have to stop asking. Not ask further. We just say, okay, Lord Shiva is like that. Can we understand it? No. Why not? Because Lord Shiva is much greater than we are. So who are we to understand a much greater personality? How can an ant understand the experience of a human being? Although all living beings, from the germs to great, great living beings, have sex desire, still you may ask about romance, right? As came up in England, as my spiritual master told about the Romans. Someone asked this question in London when it was about Rome, it said, do animals also have romantic experiences? And the other place where I just told this story, which I guess I'll tell also now, I'll try. It's talking about a cartoon. And in the cartoon, there is this this lady dog, you know. You see, go anytime. There's this lady dog, and she has all, you know, the curls, the right place, and the right long eyelashes, and a fancy dress on, etc. And there is an audience of old dogs, you know, sitting there. And then there's an interviewer, some dog with a microphone, you know. And he's asking, like, you know, so, do you have any romance in your life? And certainly, she said, oh yes, it was wonderful. It was really wonderful. First, we chased some car tires together, and then we had some chow, right? He said, and then he said, can I smell your butt? And then she said, oh, I thought you'd never ask. Yeah? And anyway, like that, the whole romance of dog life is described there, right? In this cartoon. So, they say that even in animal life, there is some form of romance. But I don't know what the romance of two germs would be, right? I have no idea, you know, one germ falls in love with another germ. And if the germ can really understand the love life, right, of the human being. So in the same way, I don't know if you can really understand the relationship between Lord Shiva and Parvati. I have my doubts about it. Maybe you can, but generally you would have to come to a highly transcendental realized platform before you might be able to understand such a thing. Because from the ordinary condition stage, a human being cannot understand. Because we are like germs compared to human beings, or human as an equation, we are similar. We are very insignificant in comparison to Lord Shiva. Anything else? No. We'll end here. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.